League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
What do you call somebody who's like really good at karaoke?
Karaoke celebrity?
Yeah.
Shit. I should have said me. Call them Jillian.
Hi, Jillian Bezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Fam, speaking of karaoke, please come join us at Obsessed Fest.
Good segue, girl.
Thank you so much. September 30th, October 2nd.
Yeah.
The Hyatt Regency in Columbus, Ohio. I just went out there to like tour the venue.
Yes, you saw it in person.
Yep, we went out with the events team. We saw the space. We saw
it's
the
great,
main
right?
stage. We saw all the meeting rooms. We saw the second stage. It is incredible.
We're going to love it.
I mean, we're doing so much. We're doing during the day. We're also doing karaoke.
Yep.
You're doing a Taylor Swift sing-along.
Yeah, we're doing like Family Feud where we're just going to have a lot of fun.
Pub trivia.
Yeah.
But then we're also doing like panels. So fam, just for clarity, there's the daytime pass and then there's the evening live shows. You
okay.
can come to both or you can come to either. They are separate tickets unless you got like early on you got a package that included
sure.
both. One quick thing, if you have any questions about Obsessed Fest, email us at help@obsessedfest.com. Don't go to the Facebook group for answers. Just email there. We'll get back to you within
oh,
a day. But the live show tickets are on sale right now.
Yay!
So it's Scamfluencers and Obsessed with Disappeared on Friday.
Okay.
Morbid and Us on Saturday.
Oh man.
We're closing the whole thing out with a drag brunch on
Woo!
Sunday. But get your live show tickets now because those tickets really are going to
they are
sell
going
out.
Fast, yeah.
So yeah, other than that, join us on the Pates. What's on the Pates?
Oh God, what isn't on the Pates?
Yeah.
All those like long series. So Relentless and Making a Murder and The Jinx and The Vow and Heaven's Gate and Night Stalker and that Gacy thing on Peacock.
That
and
Menendez
all of
thing where
Menendez
Eric
thing.
Called from prison.
Eric tells all.
Eric
he
tells
told all.
All.
And he did.
Damn, that was a game changer for
yeah.
all of us.
Yeah.
The Lacey Peterson one where maybe Scott is innocent. Eh.
I don't know.
The, what was the one in the wilderness?
Wilderness of Error. Oh, no. Wild Crime. But also
Wilderness, of Error. That was another Errol Morris one
yeah.
about that guy. Did he kill his wife? Oh, my God.
Errol.
I know.
I took so much issue with him.
You know.
What happened?
That's it. Join the Facebook group.
Yeah.
It's the True Crime Obsessed podcast discussion group.
We have fun.
We have fun.
We have fun, like, everywhere, really.
Totally.
Now that I'm saying it out loud, I realize, wow, this is fun.
It's true.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Girl, what are we talking about today?
So we are talking about The Hunt for the Chicago Strangler, which is
yeah.
on Discovery Plus. So we are picking up in the middle of episode two.
Of their episode.
Of their
two.
Episode.
Yeah. It's a three-episode series. We covered the first episode and a half. In episode one, if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it now.
Yep.
And now our episode two is picking up halfway through their episode two, and it's going to cover that and episode three.
Yeah, and we're back.
There's just no way to make it not confusing.
I know.
You know what I mean?
It's much easier when it's not three episodes.
I know.
If it's like four episodes
totally.
And it's like the first two. It makes the half make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very hard visual, like picture.
Just don't worry about it, fam. We got you.
Just keep listening. You don't have to do anything.
Can you give them a quick like previously on?
Previously on, Chicago police are not caring about.
Yeah, 51 strangled women from 2000 to 2021 in Chicago.
Yeah. Most of them are black women.
Yes.
The cops say they haven't done anything wrong, really. And now we're trying to get to the bottom of what is happening to these women.
Yeah.
And we have some nerds who have created an algorithm.
Yeah, these nerds are.
We say nerds with love. We love nerds.
I married
we
a nerd.
We are pro nerd and always have been.
This is a very nerd positive podcast.
Yeah.
My husband is a nerd celebrity, if ever there was
yeah,
one.
I mean, loves a spreadsheet.
You guys, she's reaching the end of her, her comfort with it.
Remember last week where I was like, I'm going to be good at this. No, I don't want to do it anymore.
All right, let's do this. Their company is called the Murder Accountability Project. It's Michael and Thomas.
I prefer Let's Get the Guy, but like I said,
right, yeah,
Tommy,
yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to intrude. They're professionals. This is their job.
What we set about to do in 2010 was to see if we could teach a computer to spot linked murders using data.
It's an experiment that proves successful. resulting in an algorithm specifically designed to spot patterns that often go undetected.
This algorithm can basically tell you and your city if you got a serial killer on the loose.
Yeah, they're just using the information, the data, however you say it, and to try to figure it out. So they realize that there's another pattern which happens in other cities.
Yeah.
Because right now they're focusing on Chicago to figure out what the hell is going on with these 51 victims, and now they're kind of branching out. So they say, yes, a large number of victims are what they call on the margins, vulnerable people, sex workers, what people would say, like, easy targets.
Yeah.
But there are also departures from that.
Yeah, because they range in age as well. Most of the women are Black, but they say some of them are brown, some of them are white.
Mm-hmm.
So before we go any farther, Michael says we don't know what the selection process was. And I just said he says process like a Canadian.
He's Canadian.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's so cute.
Yeah. He has that little a boot story.
Process.
Yeah. He says like grade 8 instead of 8th grade.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Canadian thing. I learned that from Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Totally.
Because I'm a cultured person and I watched Degrassi, The Next
Canadian
Generation.
Canadian TV. It's a foreign film.
No, Canadian melodrama. Are you kidding?
Kids I know.
In high school, Manny and Emma. Oh,
God.
Sean, Ellie.
The Next Generation.
Ashley and Jimmy.
But Michael and Thomas are saying they're seeing enough connections between these cases in Chicago that it warrants alarms. And then Michael refers to murder as often being an indoor sport.
Yeah, Thomas, I didn't like that.
I didn't like that
at
all.
And he goes, but not here. And then he goes, the victims were entirely disrespected. Now, to be fair, murder is never respectful,
Thomas.
That's
true.
Just to get it out there.
100%.
It's all bad.
Yeah.
But also, another thing, when they say that they aren't sure how or why the victims came in contact with the killer.
Oh, yeah. Because remember, one of them got a phone call and then she left. Another one, like, going to get the report cards was found in an abandoned building.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know how their victims are coming in contact with the killer.
Right. And Tom is like, now, I've seen this pattern before.
There was a cluster of 15 strangulations of women in the Gary, Indiana area. Most victims were found in abandoned properties and empty alleyways. So I called the public information office. I said, we have this technique that may be identifying serial murder. So the spokesman called down to the detectives and then he called me back and said, well, I checked with our detectives. There are no unsolved serial murders in Gary, Indiana.
They're like, shut up, Tom.
Now, in fairness to Indiana, like, they fuck up here, but, like, this was an untested algorithm. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
but what they're saying is we don't have any unsolved serial murders in Indiana, Thomas.
Right.
So, whatever. Like, they won't entertain the conversation at all.
Which, like, if you're Thomas and you're, like, he's done the research, he's, like, plugged it all into his machine, and he's like, no, I can tell that there's a serial killer on the loose, and Indiana's not listening to him, that must be very frustrating.
Right, like, I'm Tom, and I'm saying there's chaos down here.
Right.
Chaos down here, me. Like, let's figure it out. And they're
There's
like,
chaos down here, me.
Me. And they're like, Tom, shut up, Tom. What are you, a hysterical woman? God.
Well, because we cut to 4 years later, it's 2014. We're like right at the scene of a Motel 6 where a housekeeper has like found a body in a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who was murdered, her name was Africa Hardy. And they are able to quickly identify her killer as a man named Darren Dion Van.
Right. But do you know where Darren's from?
Where?
Indiana.
Right.
Where all of this was happening. And Tom was like, can you please pay attention? I can help you solve the murder. And they said, shut up, Tom.
Right.
Now we're back in Indiana.
And the thing was, this woman, Africa, was a sex worker. They met on a website called Backpage. And we learned that she had, like, a female pimp that she was supposed to check in with. She never checked in with her. And that's how, like, the cops got called, essentially.
And but now, female pimp, hold on a second.
Yeah.
The police call her a facilitator, but isn't she a trafficker? Isn't that the word we use, trafficker?
Well, the one thing that I've read about Backpage is that, like, it gives sex workers more autonomy to, like, pick their johns or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, I don't know. The short answer is I don't know.
Yeah, because they do use the word facilitator, which, of course, I googled.
Yeah.
And basically, it's like the definition of, as per the internet, any business or person allowing or assisting a trafficker to carry out their business.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't know. It doesn't sound
not clear.
Safe. It does not sound safe.
No, it doesn't.
But this guy, Van, they drag him downtown and we get the most insane police interrogation video we have ever seen.
Yeah. And, oh, look, he has a history of assaulting women.
Well,
violent sexual assault. Perfect.
And he literally says, we know that he moved her to the bathtub. And the cops are like, how did you accomplish that? And he said he drugged her.
It's a habit. I always move my victims.
Van confessed. He said he killed Miss Hardy and he had killed many women.
I have no problem taking you, like, right now to six bodies. If y'all got one, I'll take you six more.
And he says to the cops, you've got one body. I can take you to six other bodies right now. And then he does.
And some of them were missing for years. The cops weren't even looking for them. All of them were strangled.
Right.
Oh, now, my God.
We're obviously going to connect this to Chicago eventually. But Tom and Mike, the hot nerds with the algorithm, were like, we told you.
He was like, I was trying to help. And Tom was like, let me tell you how I was trying to help. He goes, I did everything I could to get the attention of the cops. I have phone calls, registered letters, like real documentation over a year trying to say, like, let me help you at least have a conversation. Let me explain this algorithm. I know it's new. Can you just have a phone call with me?
And they just wouldn't do it. And it is confusing to me because I can't imagine this is true, but it seems like they just don't want to solve the... I think what's happening is Gary and Deanna wasn't ready to admit that they had a serial killer on their hands. You know what I mean?
But, like, solve that. Like, who cares? Like,
I know.
These egos. It's so ridiculous.
Or, like, the amount of work it's going to cause for them. Or whatever. I know.
Poor you. You showed up to work, didn't
it's
you?
It's true.
You might as well have just stayed home.
Yeah. You think I wouldn't rather be napping than recapping this documentary right now?
I think you'd rather be here. I think you're having a nice time.
I'm having a good time. But Thomas and Mike say that, like, this situation was confirmation for them that their algorithm works.
Right.
And this was like their test case.
Right. And also, this piece of shit is serving seven life sentences without parole. Bye.
Thank God. Bye. So they're saying, all right, we were right about Indiana, and now we're looking at our data. We plug in the data for Chicago, and the algorithm is signaling a red alert.
It, like, explodes. It's basically like, okay, something horrible is happening in Chicago. People really have to pay attention.
Because Thomas says,
Chicago is a very large cluster. One of the largest we've ever seen.
You've got these victims who every few months and few years are being targeted and sort of get drowned out in the background noise of everything going on in the city. This type of chaotic environment is often ideal for serial killers to operate in.
It's such a chaotic environment that it's a perfect, quote, playing ground for serial killers. And especially if they're targeting people on the margins that no one cares about.
Right. Well, we need a woman to come in here and do the work. Right. Oh, good. Kim Fox is here.
Well, she's here. She do the work?
No, she tries.
She seems amazing.
Well, because what she says is...
We get like 10 minutes of her and I love it.
Yeah. She was elected in 2016 and she says, like, I'm a rarity because, like, she works in the state's attorney's office and she says, women of color make up only 2% of her profession, if that.
Or less.
Like, that's so crazy. So when Kim takes office, 45 women have been found strangled in Chicago with no arrests.
No arrests. And then we get Kim's backstory, and it's an incredibly told backstory. And she says, like, I see myself in these women, not in the women who've been murdered, not just because they're Black, but because they come from the communities like the kind that I came from. And we learn that she was raised in, like, the notorious Cabrini Green housing project. That's where fucking Candyman takes place.
Yeah.
She had a teenage mom. Her mom was dealing with addiction issues. She struggled with mental health.
And Kim says she was assaulted as a kid. I mean, she truly does see herself in these women.
Yeah. And even in the retelling of it for this episode, she has to pause.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, that happened 40 years ago and I still have PTSD from it.
Of course.
You know, like, I could still, the tastes and the smells and the sounds, that never leaves you.
I know. And she's trying to solve it. And these cops who've never experienced anything like this a day in their life, they just can't be bothered.
Yeah.
They're too tired. It's 5:01.
I know.
I gotta go home. I want my piping hot dinner on the table.
The thing that's annoying about Kim is that she says,
I think the fabric of what you see for so many people who are invested in these cases is that underlying theme related to sexual abuse, sexual trauma, particularly for poor women and particularly for Black women. And not having that trauma recognized, realized, or given voice to. And so I find it my obligation to do that.
I find it my obligation to fight for them and give them a voice, but then she fucking doesn't.
I know,
really.
I know.
And we'll get to that in a minute. But in 2017, police finally get a break in one of the earliest cases. Remember Gwen Williams? She was the one that, like, had the amazing family with the bodybuilder brother and sister.
Yes, from 2002.
Yeah.
There's finally a match on the DNA that was found on her body.
Remember when they went to, like, the area where Gwen's body was found?
Yeah.
And they were, like, looking around at, like, she was found in this alley surrounded by apartment buildings.
Right.
How did nobody see anything? And they're there, and they're, like, they're crying again.
I know. Don't make the families do this. Stop. Be nicer to them.
I know.
Take better care of the people in your documentary if you're going to tell the story. Like, tell stories with more care.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
like, in the true crime space, like, we just need to do better in how stories are being told and how we're treating the surviving families.
Totally. And then, like, right away, I'm like, wait, what's happening here? Because we learn about the person, the suspect whose DNA matched Gwen's killer, but we don't get his fucking name.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
They arrest this guy down in Florida for first degree murder. murder. This guy denied knowing Gwen or being with her or anything, but it is his DNA on her, so what the hell is happening, right?
Right. And so Kim, the state's attorney, does not think they've got enough evidence to prosecute this guy.
Because Gwen's siblings are like, lawyer Kim, you gotta get this guy back from Florida into Chicago so we can charge him and prosecute him. And lawyer Kim says,
a lot of people don't quite understand our burden of proof in the court of law to prove someone guilty is beyond a reasonable doubt. That is a high burden that we must meet.
But in this case, as in Teresa Bunn's, the state's attorney's office does not believe the evidence meets that burden, and they do not order the extradition.
They need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and she can't do that because of another case in Chicago that has set a precedent.
Right.
And so, we see this all the time.
Yeah, and one of the sisters tells us, like, Kim tells us that she, like, went to meet with the family and told them this story as to why they weren't going to bring their sister's rapist and murderer home.
So there was another case that set a precedent. We might have actually even covered it, honestly, because we've talked about this before, where the guy's like, yes, my DNA was there.
Yep.
Yes, I had sex with her. I didn't kill her.
And this guy, by the way, the one in the precedent-setting case, he was convicted for this rape and murder and was sent to prison.
Right.
But then his appeal said this.
His appeal was like, well, she was a sex worker, and yes, of course my DNA was there because we had sex, but that doesn't mean I killed her.
Right.
And so he won the appeal.
They couldn't prove that he killed her.
And it was overturned.
Yes.
His conviction was overturned.
And so Kim is using that precedent to say, it's the same thing here. Like, he can just say, yes, I had sex with her, but you can't prove that he killed her. And Gwen's sister is saying, like, yes, but Gwen wasn't a sex worker. But at the end of the day, nothing happened.
Right. The lawyers are like, there's really not enough here because this precedent has been set. So let's go back to the computers and the algorithm, because we learned there's a gap. There were no murders between 2014 and 2017. So, like, was the killer in prison?
Right. Did he fucking die?
Were there health problems? Like, what's going on? And more information from the algorithm, 75% of the victims were Black.
Right. And one third were white and Latino. And Mike from the Murder Accountability Project is very clear to be like, this is what the data says. I'm not saying this.
And Tom's like, I'll say it.
In America, we kill within our race. If you tell me the race of a victim, I'll tell you the offender was the same race. And I'll be right at least 77% of the time. That's what the data show.
77% of the time, it's true. Of course, there are exceptions.
So, fam, this is the bombshell that I was talking about at the end of the last episode, because Tom looks at the fucking camera and says,
we think it's likely there are at least three separate killers who are killing multiple women.
We think there are at least three separate serial killers, all active in Chicago right now.
Working independently.
Independently.
Like, all separate. There's not like a team of serial killers.
Yes.
And he says we're looking for one white guy and two Black guys, according to the information.
I literally wrote jaw on the floor. Three active serial killers in Chicago.
Which is why
right now, fam.
Which is why when they were like, well, that's weird. There's not a connection, but there were connections, but then not connections.
Yeah.
Tom is saying that explains why some cases feel connected, but not connected in the grand scheme of things, because there are three different men doing this independently.
And they're saying at least there could be
more.
We're talking about 51 dead women.
So in August of 2017, this has been going on for almost 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Tom takes all this information and goes right to the Chicago police, and they're like, okay, thanks, we'll be in touch, bye. And of course, Tom never hears from them.
Yeah, and the episode ends with Tom saying, but like, the journalists were savage.
Right.
The journalists were not dropping the ball in this story.
And also, like, the algorithm is great, but like, the facts are enough for journalists to pick up on the fact that like, something needs to be done here, because there are
51 dead women.
That like, an unsolved 50 unsolved strangulation cases. That's crazy.
Right.
Like, something's got to give here.
And again, the mere fact that they were all strangulations alone.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
So everyone except the cops are like, we got to get to the bottom of this. So now the journalists are on it, the family. Now there's like strength and power in numbers.
Yes, exactly.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So now we're on to episode 3 of The Hunt for the Chicago Strangler. It's called The Killing Rages.
So it's Chicago 2017. It's been 3 years since the last strangulation that seems to like to fit with these murders. They're saying that life in Chicago kind of seems to be getting back to normal.
Not so fast.
No.
No. Because...
Not so fast, celebrity.
No, not so fast. Oh, God. That was a real stretch.
sometimes when I'm like listening to the episodes after we get them back from the editors, you're like, oh God. It's like my favorite part of your like despair at me being so annoying.
Please stop.
Like,
oh God.
Oh God.
I can't help that.
Like, I know. I lie. I can't. It's just who you are.
I know sometimes I have a bit of a tone problem.
It's okay. Not with me. But it's fine.
You love it and you embrace it.
Totally.
So I appreciate that very much, that I could be truly myself, or better or worse on the show. So it's 2015. We're in Alexandria, Virginia. And the Murder Accountability Project starts tracking Chicago's strangulations, right? That's when this happens. And so they call it MAP, right?
Yes.
Murder Accountability Project.
Yes.
So MAP is now working with reporters to build these narratives and learn about these victims, right?
Right.
So we learn about Diamond Turner. She was 21 years old.
Hers is the murder that broke the quiet streak.
Right.
So that was March 3rd of that year.
Right. And so now 3 months later, Catherine Buchanan, who's 58 years old, there's another murder, right?
Yes. She's also the oldest woman to be murdered fitting this pattern.
Right.
58.
And this is confusing to the Murder Accountability Project, because they're like, how is he even picking his victims? To which Michael,
I know,
says one of the most terrifying things. It's true, but it's terrifying.
And you never hear it. You never expect it out of the mouth of a Canadian. I thought you guys were so nice.
So nice, right? And he goes,
we're not entirely sure what the victim selection process entails. And it may be as simple as a target is identified and is close enough to what the offender wants. And as terrifying as this sounds, a warm body to terrorize and to cause suffering to is really their end game.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe he just wants a warm body to kill, because suffering is really what they want. Nothing else matters. Michael.
Yeah, he's saying that, like, he may have a preference, but the act of killing trumps any preference.
Because of this rage.
Exactly. And I wrote, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Oh, my God,
oh,
Michael.
Oh, my God,
Michael.
I know. These are the things that Mike thinks about at night when he's home alone.
And you know what? Thank you, Michael. We need you.
I know.
You. Keep
true.
Doing it, because I'm thinking about it, but I am in a paralyzed state of anxiety
it's
about it.
True.
Michael is actually doing something. Michael, thank you.
I gotta say, looking good doing it. So
you've been very calm. Not like you're not.
Oh no, I was talking about Michael, girl.
Oh, okay, great.
Shit. But
you said a nice thing before.
You are looking good.
You texted me this morning. You said I was hot or
you
whatever,
are
and
hot.
I was like, that made me feel.
I wasn't like sexting you at 7 a.m.
Okay, out of context, that sounds like you were just like, hey, baby.
I woke up and I was like, hey, you know what?
Hey.
You're hot.
I would take it. I'd say thank you so much. What a great way to start the day. It made sense in the conversation. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We're already talking too much about a compliment about me. It's very
uncomfortable. We gotta move on.
So in 2018, there's a major story that comes out in the Chicago Tribune.
They actually identified 75 cases where they saw over approximately 20-year period of women who were strangled or assaulted. And when they dug a little bit deeper, they saw the Chicago Police Department solved basically one-third of those cases.
The point is, a major, major news outlet is like publishing the story for the first time.
Right. So 75 cases, the cops solve a third of them. And everyone's like, so what about the other 51? Can we worry about them, please?
Right.
Thank you.
So like finally, somebody has cast a light on the fact that like 68% of these cases have not been solved.
So this has been happening since 2001.
Yeah.
The major story comes out in 2018. 2 months after the story breaks, they're like, maybe we should start a task force.
It's just...
Why did it take so long?
But also, like, Chicago Tribune, why did it take you so long to write this fucking story? Jesus, everyone's to blame.
Everyone, except Mickey and everyone else.
Right. So the Chicago PD assigns a special team of homicide detectives who's going to work with the FBI Violent Crimes Task Force to take a closer look at the cases. And they're looking for, like, any links that might connect the 51 cases. They're saying also, like, is there more evidence to be collected? Is there anything that we can do, like, any further actions to be taken in any of these cases? And they talk about it as though, like, they were always planning to do this. You know what I mean? Like, that they were always going to get around to this.
Yeah, they're using this hindsight to their advantage.
Totally.
And I'm not falling for it.
No, absolutely
I see right
not.
Through it. So we learned about Laura Dawn Harbin.
Yes.
Because we learned 25% of the women are white.
Yes.
And which is also like, wait, what's going on here? Which is why they're like, I think there's more than one guy.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it now because it's like, I don't know that there are serial killers here. And like somebody says it later.
There might be a serial killer, but what if there were 51 different people who committed them? That seemed to me so much worse and so much more of an indictment of our city.
Isn't it more terrifying if 51 people individually killed these women and all 51 of them were able to get away with it?
Yes, it's all bad. That is a very scary. Yeah, I don't know what's worse. Right?
I know.
That there's one person capable of doing this or that there are 51 of them.
Honestly.
I'm scared.
So
we meet Marissa, and she's Laura's daughter, and she tells us about Laura, and, you know, Laura suffered from addiction, and sometimes she'd disappear for days or even months.
And we don't really get the timeline. Like, when Laura's body is found in Chicago, she was 44 years old, and her daughter is saying to us, like, she never left Louisville. Like, we're in Louisville meeting her family, and she somehow, we don't know how, Laura ended up ultimately abandoning her kids and, like, just moving on to Chicago, where she was eventually murdered.
Yeah, like, she missed Marissa's graduation, and she'd be gone for months. And then every once in a while, Marissa would get a message on Facebook from someone else saying, like, your mom, because her mom wouldn't always have a phone, or she would just ask someone to find Marissa and just say, like, hey, your mom thinks you're really beautiful and really misses you and hopes everything's okay. And Marissa's like, who are you? I don't know who you are.
It's moments like this, I mean, and just in general, but, like, especially in moments like this, that I really feel so badly for people who are suffering from addiction.
Oh my God.
Because, like, there's nothing in the world that could take me away from Daisy, except for heroin, probably.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Or meth, or, yeah, and, like, whatever the, of course.
And,
of course.
Like, you're just so fucking, you must be so, like, sometimes I wonder, why does addiction exist? Like, why do we have these things in the world that just cause pain?
Yeah.
Why does it have to exist?
I know. And they also, like, have to feel good, too.
I know.
What I mean? Like, I hate that people are suffering from that, but it makes so much sense to me. Like, I totally understand.
It's so sad. Like, listening to the daughter talk is so heartbreaking for the daughter. But as a parent, I was like, yeah, your mom knows that. Your mom knows how sad you are.
Of course.
And she can't, like, she just can't stop.
Because it's not her.
I know. It's so fucking sad.
And what Marissa is saying is, like,
somebody knows something. Like, this is pretty weird that all these women have all been, you know, murdered the same way. That's a lot of lives, and a lot of lives around that life that all affect it.
Someone has to have some kind of valuable information.
Who's this lady who DM'd me on Facebook last year? Like that lady's got to know something.
And that would happen periodically, and they'd always be different people. So, like, if we track down those people, like, maybe someone knows something.
Yes. And they're saying that Laura's race is important because we are reminded again that, according to the experts, killers tend to kill within their own ethnic group.
Right.
And again, we're reminded that the Murder Accountability Project thinks that there must be at least 3 active serial killers in Chicago, which, again, is fucking terrifying.
Which is terrifying. And so, like, because the cause of death is the same, the way they're found is the same, sometimes where they're found is the same, but the race and age and occupation, like, they're all different. And so what the Murder Accountability Project is saying is that
the brazenness of the murders, dumping bodies in busy areas with potential eyewitnesses, suggests that the killers know these neighborhoods well.
It implies that the killers are familiar with the area. That at least is a clue. You know what I mean?
Right.
That, like, no one's looking into it at all.
Right. And remember, in 2018, Tom gave the cops all of this information over a year ago, and the cops were going to call him right back real quick, and then nothing happened.
Right. So in June 2018, in response to, like, all this media coverage, people are kind of coming out of the woodwork. People are demanding answers, and they have a big community rally. And they say 2 months after the rally, another woman is found strangled and dumped on the south side. And this is Rio. Remember we talked about Rio in the first episode and her cousin Ricardo.
Yeah, she's the 51st victim.
And this is where Ricardo, who's Rio's cousin, starts to, like, play a major role in this episode.
From now, like, until the end of the series, we're with him.
And he just is, like, a person I want to, like, be in his orbit.
Yeah.
He starts a nonprofit called Fists Up, Guns Down. And he's saying that, like,
gloves up, because it's boxing.
Oh, gloves up. Yeah, gloves up, guns down. It's a nonprofit that hopes to teach kids to avoid fights that result in gun retaliation.
Yeah.
But the point is, he says that he was only able to do anything, become anything, because Rio believed in him.
Ricardo's story. So Ricardo discovers that Rio is missing.
Everyone pull over. Everyone pull over, because the way that Ricardo finds out that Rio is missing doesn't make any sense until it does.
Because he's like, his family was at the hospital because his other cousin was just killed due to a random shooting.
I go up to the hospital and I see him laying there. And I went back downstairs to let my family know what the situation was. And everybody kept saying, did anybody talk to Rio? Because she was the only person who wasn't there. My entire family was there. Everybody was there. Rio wasn't there. And nobody could get in contact with her.
Rio is the only person not in the hospital room, and she totally would be.
So Hold on a second. Ricardo's other cousin was killed. The entire family goes to the hospital. Rio's not there. She would absolutely be there. Right. And that's how they find out that Rio's fucking missing.
Like, this poor guy.
And they say, like, the next day they're at the aunt's house consoling her over the loss of her child.
Right.
When the fucking phone rings and it's the cops saying they found Rio's body in a fucking garbage can.
And you know what Ricardo's doing? He's doing good work for the community to honor Rio with his Gloves Up program. You know what I mean? Like, he's doing such good work. He's taking all of this, like, pain and strife and doing good things with it.
And this is where, like, he just can't stop giving us the analogies about what an amazing person she was. It's analogy after analogy. He goes,
what type of person throw a woman in a garbage can like that? She was not a piece of trash. She was my strength. She was everything. She was Whoopi Goldberg on Sister Act. She was the nun that came and saved everybody. She brought the voice. She brought the music. She set me free. She was my Harriet Tubman.
She was Whoopi Goldberg in Sister Act. She was the nun that came in and saved everybody. She brought the voice and the music.
I was like,
Ricardo, that is the most amazing.
I totally get it. The way he explains it, I'm like, I know exactly what that means.
But, like, what a thing to, like, bubble to the top of your brain to describe your cousin.
And then he doesn't stop there. He goes, she set me free. She was my Harriet Tubman.
She was my Harriet Tubman.
Ricardo.
He is, but,
just
like,
the biggest heart.
He's so strong and he's sobbing. And it's just like, I don't know how anyone survives this. I don't know how you move on. I don't know how you get out of bed the next morning.
And so, even worse, Ricardo then suddenly learns, like, his one cousin is shot and killed in a random gun shooting. Then he learns about Rio, and then he learns, wait, there's a pattern.
Right.
50 other women, in addition to Rio, have been strangled. And he goes, I'm sorry, how long did the cops know about this? Why isn't anything being done?
Because what he's saying is that when he realizes that the cops are shitty, this is when he's like, a different cop would come every day. Nobody was really paying attention to this. He starts talking to, like, the community leaders.
Right.
And he's talking to the guy at the barbershop and the guy at the grocery store.
Right.
And they're saying to him, like, oh, Ricardo, we've known about this for years. Women have been going missing and winding up dead for years. And Ricardo is incensed.
Right.
He didn't know about this. And if everybody knows about this, how has there not been some sort of public safety bulletin?
Right.
How are they not informing the public to be careful? I think that it's because they don't know.
They don't.
They're not counting. They're not talking to each other. Like, we know it's 50. I'm not excusing it.
But, like,
I'm saying,
Tom gave them the information a year ago now.
Well, he gave one guy the information a year ago. And who knows what they did with that? And it's like, I'm not excusing the behavior of the cops. We need to do better. We need a system.
Yeah.
We need Tom's system in place. So they're like, boop, 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 goes
we
off.
We have the technology
right,
now.
Totally.
I don't understand you. There are no excuses here. Everyone can communicate with everyone. Do your job.
I know.
Just do your job.
I know.
It feels so easy. Like, I know it's a hard job.
I know.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
So, and at this point, Mike from the Murder Accountability Project?
MAP.
He's saying
serial killers are that rare breed of criminal offender who force the police into making the very tough decision of protecting the public's safety and arming them with information versus causing a public panic and a media firestorm.
Serial killers put cops in a very uncomfortable position.
Too bad.
They have to weigh the idea of, like, public safety versus public mayhem.
I know. Isn't something so complicated when we're trying to, like,
save lives and
get some closure?
I'm the problem. If I were ever get a text alert that there was a serial killer on the loose in Hell's Kitchen, you'd know about it.
You'd stay inside.
We got him off. Exactly. I would stay inside.
I would take that. Like, that's a risk I'm willing to take.
Totally.
A couple of rough nights for Steve and Daisy in the house with you screaming your head off. Who cares? We need it. It's worth it.
It's the least we could do.
You know
GB.
What I mean? Yeah. Like, can we just, why do we have to do
you
everything?
You know what? I would just be an inside celebrity.
There it is. You'd be. Oh, God. So the families are all on the news.
I feel like the listeners are probably more sick of it than you are. I'll take a break for the rest of the app.
Can you just do me that
totally.
Kindness?
Thank I'll
you.
Be a rest celebrity.
Okay, thank you so much. That's your last one now. I hope it was worth it. You wasted your last ebrity on that. I hope you're happy now. So the families are all on the news, and they're telling stories of their loved ones, and they're basically, like, begging the cops to do something.
Yeah.
So Congressman Bobby Rush gets involved, and he does this town hall, and it is packed.
Usually, you know, when politicians hold town halls, it's a crapshoot. You know, you maybe get two or three people to show up. But I remember that it was, like, wall-to-wall people in this auditorium.
And they had all the major journalists there, the Tribune, all those people's there.
Everyone in the community is speaking out. Map was there. Thomas and Michael, our algorithm friends.
This
major
is where
journalists.
Tom, as part of his speech, says there's a magic in counting things.
You know?
He loves math.
But, like,
he loves counting.
Is...
He loves an algorithm.
Because we can, like, take it and do some very human things with it. You know what I mean? It's, like, this really great combination.
And that's really simplifying it, too, because it's, like I've said 800 times in this episode, if one cop had just counted, hey, how many of those strangling deaths has there been in Chicago in the last couple years? 51.
Huh.
No one's counting.
No one's counting.
Yeah.
So people are frustrated. They're angry, obviously.
Yes.
Like, even after everyone knows that this is happening, years are still going by and no movement's happening.
Yeah.
So Brendan, the cop who's here, is very defensive. And he's like, you know, there's a serial killer on the loose for 20 years. Everyone looks at the cops to do something. When do we get a break? And I'm like, you know what? No shit, dude. Like, you have to listen to yourself here. What are you saying?
No one made you be a cop. No one forced you to go into this line of work.
And if you're not going to do anything, then do something else. Go be an accountant.
But it's also like, I'm not expecting them to have magical powers. Like, but I think the community would take some comfort in them saying, we're working on it.
Yes,
like,
say
we don't
something.
Know, but we feel you. We see you. We are working
Instead
on it.
Instead of like, we've never done anything wrong and everyone stop asking us to find the serial killer.
Right.
I'm sorry. Who else's job is it?
I know.
It's becoming everybody else's. Now, Beverly.
I love her.
The activist with the
Beverly
Soul
with
Garden.
The Soul Garden.
We love her.
Beverly approached me and asked if she could have a couple minutes of my time, which I said, of course I could.
And I said, I heard you and I would like to talk to you. And he gave me his card.
You know, she asked if she could come and meet with me at the police station.
And we just began to have normal conversations about his children, my children.
She says, I saw something in him. And she sees a way into a conversation.
And this is really valuable. Like, he's doing the wrong thing. She's one of those people who can bridge the gap somehow.
And so what she wants to do, I think, is just have like a human conversation, like person to person. And she gets his card and she shows up to the station and they start chatting about life and their families.
And we hear that from both of them. Like, he, two camera in this documentary, is talking about talking to her and how lovely that was. And she's talking, and like, they're trying to build some kind of bridge.
Which is like, fine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I get it with the Soul Garden, but we don't have the time anymore.
I know.
Like, I know that, like, you shouldn't have to chip away this long to, like, humanize these women and show him that, like, look, I used to be a sex worker and look at me.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not, like, gross either. Like, maybe you should care. Like, we shouldn't have to do this.
We shouldn't have to, but in this instance, it's what
she can
do.
It's the only thing she can do.
It's all she's got.
You know? And so now it's January 2020. The murder of Diamond Turner, the 46th victim.
She was the one that, like, broke the streak. Remember, there had been, like, 3 years of no killing. Her murderer is arrested.
Right, and his name is Arthur Hilliard.
It's a case where you hear about it and, like, man, this is an open and shut case, right? I mean, they were involved in a relationship of some kind. There's an eyewitness who says they've seen, like, him cleaning blood streaks from his bedroom to the door. You know, this is from the police telling me that.
The entire family was screaming at the cops, can you look into this Arthur guy?
Yeah, this is where the murder accountability program, it's got to be a serial killer, starts to, like, lose some steam for me. Because it's like, we now know who did this. He says he didn't do it. They test all the DNA. He definitely did do it.
There was evidence linking him to the scene. There were witnesses. People saw him cleaning blood streaks.
Right.
Like, this is the guy.
So they've got his DNA now. And they're like, well, if everyone is saying these cases must all be connected, let's go see if his DNA was at any of the other crime scenes. And now, this is where we learn many of these crime scenes didn't have any DNA, or the DNA was, like, not collected, or there wasn't enough to collect it.
How are you not collecting DNA?
Well, we get conflicting information here, because Mike from the Murder
Accountability Project
is saying to us,
the lack of DNA in so many of the Chicago cases can be attributable to a number of explanations. One, the offender targeting African American victims in particular seems to be rather organized, very sadistic, and has probably put significant pre-planning into the crime itself. So it appears he has taken some steps to avoid leaving any evidence.
It's not that they didn't collect it, it's that there wasn't any, which implies to Mike that this killer had gotten really good at not leaving DNA.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what the right answer is, but of all the ones where there was DNA, this Arthur Hilliard guy who killed Diamond Turner, there was DNA and it wasn't his.
Right.
So it's kind of like maybe they're not all connected.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know.
I don't know. And no one else does either, apparently, right. So we're not alone.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Okay, so now it's May 2021. Remember Darren Vann from Indiana?
He was the actual serial killer.
Right.
That, like, Tom and Mike were right about.
And he confesses to the cops, like,
yes.
I carry, like, a cord around with me to tie them up. I drug my victims.
And I'm going to show you where all the bodies are.
Where, like, six more bodies are. Right. So, remember, Tom said, hey, Indiana, there's a serial killer. You should pay attention. Indiana wouldn't listen. Tom was right. The guy's Darren. Right?
Right. Well, right. Yes. Yes.
So, Tom's like, hey, dummies, Indiana.
Yeah.
Can you make sure he isn't confessing to any murders in Chicago?
Right.
And the cops are like, yeah. He didn't say anything about Chicago. Shut up, Tom.
Guess what?
That's not true.
Yeah. Because Tom, being Tom, did a Freedom of Information, a FOIA, for that police interrogation video.
Right. From 2014.
Yeah. Which we've already seen some of. And literally, this guy, Van, says...
I really can't give you Illinois because Illinois probably has a whole lot of, they have more than Indiana, let's say that.
I've done way more murders in Illinois than I have in Indiana, and I can't even, like, begin to tell you about those.
I've killed so many women, I don't even know the number.
Right. And
Oh my God.
This is, like, he's saying, yes, you got me on all the ones in Indiana, but Illinois, the one that we've been focusing on for these three episodes, he's saying I killed even more people there. So he very easily could be the killer of these 51 women.
And also, remember how, like, the demographics are different, like,
yes.
The ages and the occupations? He says...
He would get these killing rages.
I guess what I'm asking... how does the rage, how do you connect the rage with these people that...
They're random. All it does is take the wrong person to say something or trigger something from my past.
Anything can set me off. So he's confirming that, like, part of the pattern is that there is no pattern.
Yep.
The only pattern is that he gets these killing rages.
Totally. And he says, I would, like, when I would feel these rages coming on, I would try to get as far away from my family as possible. I'd hop on the train and go into Illinois.
Go to Chicago.
Exactly. And so Tom and Mike are saying, like, well, we know where he lived, and we can, like, the closest train line is this Green Line train. And they say right there, boop, 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 boop. We see the highlight of all the women who were killed right by this train station.
There are victims, like, right on the train line, right?
Yeah.
And also, like, why did the cops just lie to Tom like this? Like,
I know.
Why did it take all of this for Tom to find this out?
Is it just ego? Is it just this random guy can't be right? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Like, doesn't everybody just want to solve the thing?
I don't understand. This is what I've been screaming about for 10,000 years. It makes no sense. It's like, because it seems so clear.
Yeah.
Like, just solve it.
I know.
And then we won't be talking about how much you fucked up because the cases will be solved and a documentary won't be. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Like, just do the work and do your job and then... go home and go to bed.
And, like, the thing that the Chicago cops can't tell us is, did you have another theory? Did you rule this guy out? Like, they won't even say it. So maybe there is a reason. They just never will tell us anything.
But the thing is, the Chicago cops won't connect this Darren Vann guy to any of their cases.
Right.
Like, the good news is that this guy's in prison forever.
Yes.
For the other murders. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
But the cops are still not even saying we're not at liberty to discuss this.
Right.
They're just saying he's not connected to our cases.
Yeah.
Also, in the most cynical way, just connect it to the cases and then you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
Like, just say, like, that could be an easy out for you.
I mean, and in fairness to the Chicago cops, like, the killings did continue after this guy went to prison.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But he could have done some of them.
Some of them before they were found. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and he seems very eager and willing to talk.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just go ask him.
Like, you have a guy who's willing to talk. You have Tom with the information. What am I missing?
And also, last point on this, if he's admitting to killing a whole bunch of women in Indiana, but we know it's not these women, can we find the other women? Can we find the women this guy's already admitted to killing?
Care?
I know.
Oh my God.
I know. know.
And so it ends, like, suddenly I'm all, like, furious. And suddenly, like, the credits are showing up on the screen while people are talking. I'm in the middle of this rage, and I'm like, what?
I know. We don't get any answers.
Because it ends with, like, I don't know, maybe we'll figure it out one day. And that's when we get Riley, who's Angela, like, the first victim we learned about, her father, who's basically saying everything we've been saying, but he says it in a much quieter way.
Yeah.
But he's like,
I'm not saying it's supposed to be all hands on deck just because it's my family member. I'm saying it's supposed to be all hands on deck because of the look at the circumstances, look at the patterns. This shouldn't be hard to find or fix to solve.
Do your job. Do your job. That's all we ask. Do what you're paid to do. That's all we ask. Just simply do your job.
Just do your jobs.
I
like,
know.
We're begging you, please. Like, just really begging, because he doesn't have any closure about his daughter either.
I know.
And then it ends with, if you have any information, which they clearly need, maybe they won't listen to you. Tom has, like, the ultimate information.
I know.
But you can go to cpdtip.com if you have any info.
I mean, it's just so crazy in the end. I very much came down on, like, it seems to me much more random than, like, a serial killer or killers. Because the other important thing that we learn here is that the DNA didn't match the guy that we know is a killer of Diamond.
Yes.
But the other DNA that they have from the other victims in, like, 20 cases don't match each other.
Right.
So it's not the same person killing all these people, at least the ones that we have DNA for. It's all different people.
Yeah.
And so it's like, again, I say that's more terrifying than the idea of serial killers on the loose.
Right. Because they solved a third of these cases, the 75 strangulations.
Yep.
And none of the, like, they were all solved. And they were all, like, the boy. Like, how many people are out here doing this?
So I'm just saying, like, Tom and Mike, your algorithm clearly worked in Indiana. I don't think it quite worked in Chicago, but keep doing the work, guys.
But, like, it still shines light on things we need to know. Then it's up to the cops to do the human work.
Look, if we can simplify it to, like, I agree we should count things. You know what I mean? If one cop had just done the math and been like, oh, shit, there's 51 of these murders.
Right.
You know?
And it's not, like, a magic formula, but it's a really, it's valuable information.
100%.
That the cops should be using to do their job. So, Brendan, I'm mad at you.
Right.
You're going to keep defending all this stuff. Like, just be honest.
Totally.
That's all. Do your job. That's it. So that's it, Brendan. The words I have for you are shut up. Two words. That's all.
Yeah, just be a shut up celebrity.
Be a shut up.
Sorry.
Now you have to go one full episode without doing it.
Okay, fine.
Because you promised me that was the last one, and now we're here.
Here we are. Oh, girl, we did it. We did, what's it called?
It's called The Hunt for the Chicago Strangler.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
All three apps on Discovery Plus. Really interesting stuff, fam. Go check it out.
No, we got, someone's going to get to the bottom of this.
Yes.
We got to figure it out.
Also, fam, come see us at Obsessed Fest, September 30th to October 2nd in Columbus, Ohio. Look, I'm going to explain it one more time.
Okay.
So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, daytime programming. It's one. It's the festival pass. It gets you into everything.
All the events, like the panels and then the Family Feud stuff and the karaoke and all that stuff.
And the Taylor Swift sing-along. Right. All the stuff that happens during the day, except the drag brunch. That's a whole separate thing.
Okay.
But Friday and Saturday gets you into all of the stuff that's happening.
Great.
Separately, we're doing live shows on Friday night and Saturday. Friday night, it's Scamfluencers followed by Obsessed with Disappeared. Saturday night, it's Morbid followed by True Crime Obsessed.
Oh, no.
And then Sunday morning, we have, like, a whole epic drag brunch. Please come and see us. It's going to be a weekend of 2,200 of your true crime best friends.
We're going to have so much fun.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be you and me, Joey Ellen, Bob Roth, Payne Lindsay, the Let's Go to Court ladies,
Maggie, Robbie,
Daisy Egan,
yes.
The Generation Y guys,
yes.
Tim and Lance.
So
it's going to be all your favorite true crime
Maybe
podcasters.
Maybe some surprise guests. I don't know.
Maybe some surprise
guests. I don't know anything about anything. Just along for the ride.
Also, join us on the Patreon, fam. Over 350 full ad-free bonus episodes to download and binge right this second.
Yeah, so it's the ad-free versions of these episodes. And then, like, the long-form series, like Making a Murderer, The Jinx, The Staircase, all that stuff that have, like, multiple episodes.
Yes, so many.
So many.
Girl, what are we doing next?
Oh, we're doing Dirty Tricks on Showtime.
What is that?
About the game of bridge and all and like cheating in the bridge world.
Really?
Yeah, and just like scandals in the world of bridge.
The world of how do you find these?
Isaac Mizrahi is there.
Shut
the
up.
Whole thing.
Oh my. Isaac Mizrahi is doing a solo show at Studio at 54 Below.
No way.
Yeah,
it's like I'm going to go and ask him about bridge.
Totally.
He loves the game of bridge. He's like a bridge snob. It's a whole thing.
He's a bridge celebrity.
He's a bridge celebrity. It's a whole, it's like the scandal that like rocked the bridge world.
Oh my God.
Or whatever.
All right, Bibble, stay tuned for the trailer for that. Our ridiculous, hilarious outtakes. That's it.
That's
we love
it.
You.
Thanks so much. And let's find this guy.
Yeah,
or these
find
guys.
This fucking guy.
Like multiple guys.
Or multiple.
There are
oh
too
my
many
God.
Of them. Let's all stay home.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I'm scared now.
All right, we love you guys.
Bye, I love you. Bye.
Bye.
For his generation, he may be the best bridge player in the world. He could have been, you know, the next Michael Jordan of bridge. He was that good.
They just kept winning major events, him and his partner, on whatever team they played, almost to the point it was kind of unbelievable. Such a young pair, winning everything. They were at the top. They had everything you could want in Bridge. They were making great money. They were winning all kinds of things. What more could you want? I see people writing that he's a cheater, he's a cheater, he's a cheater. They put it inside my head.
It was all coming to a boil. There was too much cheating going on, and it had to stop. Like, the shit had to hit the fan.
I didn't cheat, but I brought it on myself. Bridge is all my life. They took my baby. They took half of me. I cannot forgive for that.
You know, we recently opened a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle in my home. I spent 2 hours turning all the pieces to the right side and then put it away. I was like, I don't want to do this.
Did you break Steve's heart?
No, Steve knew I wasn't going to do it. He didn't even participate at all.
Oh, I thought maybe, and then like you went to sleep and you woke up the next morning
No.
And there was like the Picasso all
well,
done.
That
and the
would have happened, but I'm just one of those people who like, I don't understand what people do in their homes after 7 o'clock at night. So I was like, I guess I'll try a puzzle. Nope, not
you,
for me.
Yeah, you just go right to bed.
I do.
One episode of Girls Five Ever, and it's...
Yeah, we're gonna be famous forever, cause forever's too short.
You're asleep before your head hits the pillow.
It's true.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big.